Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a technology presentation from April 2018. Dr. Simon Anaheim, Scientific Group Leader, Swiss Federal Laboratories for Materials, Science and Technology, EMPA, presents Textiles for Human Body Cooling.
Good. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my presentation this afternoon about textiles for human body cooling. Actually, I was very pleased to follow the preceding discussions about cooling of the human body, and I'm extremely happy now just to follow up now with this same topic, trying to go a bit more into detail to elaborate a bit more on human physiological responses and how we can support the human physiological responses at the skin level, but also a bit deeper down to the core of the body. But first, just let me shortly introduce the lab I'm coming from. I'm coming from the Material Science Institute in Switzerland called EMPA and working in the lab of biomimetic membranes and textiles. And here we try to mimic functions of the skin into textiles. And so we try to understand into molecular actions, including also finishing of materials and incorporate them into smart functions of materials applied on the human body, and therefore bridge the gap from the soft material structures up to the human body performance. This includes that we are quite an interdisciplinary team in our lab, which try to somehow endlessly work together and try to develop new concept, new materials. And I don't want to go into detail, because then this would already be my last slide today, but just that you see somehow the complexity of the whole topic. We just got it before. There are many, many aspects to be considered, and even going down to the molecular level increases the complexity of the whole system as well. Finally, the goal is, as I said, to mimic the function of the human skin, and one of the main functions of the human skin is providing the interface of the human body with its environment and regulate the core body temperature, which is maintain the temperature of our body around 37 Celsius. And we will see in a second what happens if this kind of temperature of the human body exceeds. Of course, this includes also measuring body responses. And here again, a lot of sensors are like incorporated into skin. So we have temperature sensing systems, we have pressure sensing systems. So we also try to understand this and incorporate the whole understanding in either physical models, which can be used as testing methodologies to further develop textiles and materials, but also to try to incorporate this into models, to do computational mathematical modeling, which of course will be validated based on human models, human subject trials, and this knowledge, again, we can give back to our colleagues to further develop molecular and material concepts. So, coming back to the human body and how it interacts with its environment. We just heard before about evaporation, conduction, convections, and here you can see all this on one scheme, like an exercising woman running at a certain body core temperature, which determines if it's at euthermia or becoming like hypothermic, and you can see all the different interactions between the human body and it's an environment, just starting as the sun. Well, don't look at the slide, just go outside. You will just figure out how solar radiation comes onto your body and heats your body up. So there is a heat gain based on this irradiation, but on the other hand, all the warm bodies also emit some radiation. So it's already always like a balance between the emitted radiation and the emitted radiation. Furthermore, we heard about the evaporation, of course, evaporation of moisture, of sweat on the human body, which cools down skin, and in the end, which finally should cool down subperficial blood, which finally then goes back to the core and tries to maintain temperature of our core. We heard about wind, which plays a crucial role. Of course, it does, because it's very important also for the convective heat transfer. So if we have airflow around the body, this again affects heat loss and also heat gain in case air temperature is above body temperature. So here we have some effects as well. And we also heard about the conduction, so the interactions of the body with rigid bodies and the exchange of heat. So this, on a short note, all the different interactions between the body and its environment, and that's not all. There is even more complexity behind, because before we heard about just heating up the body, running leads to certain effects, but here again, we need to consider how the body affects. Is it, as right now outside, it's just like a weather challenge. If it's warm, high temperatures, high radiation, low wind, for example, which does not allow us to emit or dissipate heat, will put some challenges on our body. On the other hand, if you see this runner here running on the energy lab on Hawaii, which is one of the hottest points during a triathlon, so here it reaches around 50 degrees Celsius air temperature. You can see the sea behind, so humidity is rather high. So these guys don't even have the possibility to dissipate heat from evaporation, because we already have a very, very high humidity level. So coming back in a second, how we can deal with this kind of situation as well. We have some kind of activity challenges. Of course, this guy also has an activity challenge, but if we go skiing, if we go hiking, sometimes we have high activities when skiing down, when hiking up, and we rest on the top of a mountain, we wait in front of the chairlift to get back again, so here we have no activity. So this kind of intermittent activities also put different challenges and different demands on the human body, so we do not get too warm or too cold. And finally, like occupational challenges, mainly for people working in hazardous environments, they need to be protected on one hand. They have to provide very high activities with this protective clothing, so they should also dissipate their metabolic heat produced during their work. However, just wearing protective clothing hinders them to release the heat. So again, here you have an accumulation of heat, and which in the end can end in hyperthermia and result in heat stress, in dramatic reductions in body performance, and finally even become life-threatening. So that it's really an issue we can see from this chart. So how is human performance affected by heat? Here you just can see a time to exhaustion test. So this is like running at the same speed or cycling at the same intensity as long as possible. And this was conducted at different environmental conditions. And you can see that the dramatic reduction in performance with increasing ambient temperature. So before we've heard about an increase in performance of up to 10% with having some cooling methodologies or cooling help. So here you can see that without any cooling support, we definitely get a dramatic reduction in performance on one hand, and we get really a life-threatening increase in core body temperature. But it's not only about the performance, the physical performance, it's also about the cognitive performance. Here we can see that going up to 38.5 Celsius core body temperature, we have an increase in cognitive performance, so you perform better, you take better and faster decisions. However, afterwards, you start to make more errors, you take the wrong decisions, and specifically for occupational conditions, this can be very, very dramatic. So there is definitely a need for cooling in hot conditions, not only to maintain performance, but also to maintain cognitive performance and to reduce errors and making the right decisions even in stressful conditions. So talking a bit more about core body temperature and how this works. So basically you can see our body tries to maintain this 37 degrees Celsius. This is to maintain the optimal functioning of our organs, which are of course mainly located in our trunk and which is our brain, also to have like a steady environment. However, when we expose to cold temperatures, and this is, well, you may thought 20 degrees not that cold, but not wearing clothing at all, 20 degrees Celsius may become rather cold. And you can see like reactions of our body. What happens? If it gets too cold, we get something called like vasoconstriction. So this is reducing the diameter of our cardiovascular system. So we have reduced blood perfusion in our legs, reduced blood perfusion in our arms in order to maintain the core body temperature. If we move further or even decrease further the temperature, we start to have a decrease in skin temperature. If we even get colder, you will start shivering in order to produce heat and to maintain core body temperature. If that still is not enough, we will see a decrease in core body temperature, which is called hypothermia. And imagine, just if you go below 36 or 35.5 degrees Celsius, this already becomes life-threatening. So just having a reduction of around 2 to 3 degrees Celsius, this is very hazardous for our body. The same actually, well, not the same, the opposite happens if we go the other direction. So if you go outside right now, your body will react and he will dilate your blood vessels. He will dilate in order to dissipate the heat. So we become like an even distribution of the core temperature around the whole body. If this is not enough or actually to maintain the core body temperature, skin temperature starts to increase and perspiration, so sweating will be initiated. And sweating, well, not sweating itself cools down, but evaporation of moisture starts to cool down the skin. And as I mentioned before, cooling down the skin cools down the blood. Cooling down the blood helps to maintain core body temperature. If this action is not enough as well, we got the increase in core body temperature. And here again, we can accept up to 2-3 degrees Celsius increase in core body temperature. Afterwards, it gets quite dangerous for our body. So looking even a bit more into detail about our human body, how do we perceive skin temperature? And actually, we all are very good sensors. So we do very well, very nicely sense some changes in skin temperature. So normally, our temperature is slightly lower than our core body temperature, which is around 32 to 36 degrees Celsius. And you can see here already an increase above 0.2 degrees Celsius in temperature. We start to figure out that it gets warmer, or the opposite, that it gets colder. Just if it is warm, if we are above 36 degrees Celsius, it's just like warm, or if it's below 31 degrees, we just feel cold. However, here even we have lower thresholds to figure out that it gets even more cold or that it gets even more warm. So here we are very, very sensitive to changes in temperature, and actually that's not all. This is not the same for the whole body. So this even differs on the body, and that has a big effect also how to design clothing and textiles in order to maintain comfort. So you can see some body parts, which is, for example, the upper body for women as well as for men. Sorry, this way, men and women. On the upper body, we do not figure out that much of hot or warm stimuli. However, in the lower trunk region, the lower back, but also the lower abdominal region, we feel much more like local hot stimuli. So therefore, clothing have to take this into account, that probably in the belly or in the lower back region, we have to be more susceptible to warm or even cold conditions. And one has to say, well, one can see here, women are more susceptible to this cold or hot stimuli than men on one hand. And on the other hand, as soon as we start to exercise, this becomes less relevant. So if you design clothing and textiles for exercise, like the comfort perception or the suspension for this hot stimuli becomes less relevant. But not only the perception, but also like sweat rates are different on our body. We do not sweat the same all over the body, but we have certain spots where we have higher sweat rates. And here you can clearly see that is for a man exercising at a moderate intensity. However, it's rather similar for women, even though it's like slightly lower rates for women compared to men. And and of course, if you do more intensive exercise, sweat rate also gets higher. And finally, anyway, there are very wide individual variations between humans, so that just gives you a glimpse how it can look like. However, the same for all individuals is that we have a rather high sweating region in the back, around the spine, on one hand, and in the head region, mainly the forehead is a second region where we see that there is a lot of or quite a high sweat rate. Here again, this can become quite important when looking at body mapping shirts and how to profit efficiently from evaporative cooling. So now, being directly in the topic of evaporative cooling, just giving you an idea how the different aspects or how the different phenomena of heat loss are distributed. So sitting in here, like in a climatized room with around 20 degrees Celsius, we always have this kind of heat transfer from the core to the skin, and from the skin we have the interaction to the environment, and we have to be aware that like radiation, convection, conduction, and evaporation are quite evenly distributed. However, if temperature goes up, as we heard before, high temperature, which is rather similar between the body and the environment, which means there's a low temperature gradient, so conduction and convection does not play an important role anymore. Radiation, which means the bodies around us have similar temperatures than our human body, so there is not much of like the net radiant heat loss, but the only way how the body can dissipate and lose energy and heat is by evaporation. So just, well, it was nice to hear discussion and hear the figure how to prove actually that really the evaporation is the main part to take into account when it is about the heat loss from the human body. It gets even more dramatic if we include some solar radiation. So, of course, the sun is much warmer than we are, so we got rather a net heat gain from radiation, which means we somehow need to compensate for this heat gain by further evaporation, and which means we need even to increase evaporative heat loss by increasing sweat rate. So, in the end, it's all about sweating. And how now can textiles and how can fabrics support this? Here you can see, and again, unfortunately, it's not that easy, but they're quite complex phenomena going on by in the interaction between the skin. You can see on this side, the interface between skin and the garment, like the fabric layer and the adjacent air layer, and of course then the environment. Here, again, we need to consider direct conduction, convection and radiation from the skin to the outer garment. In case we start with sweating, we also need to consider like wet conduction. Water has a very high heat capacity, which can take up a lot of heat, but also have quite good conductive properties. So here, this facilitates, so to say, the heat loss from skin to the fabric. We've heard about the wicking before, so the lateral wicking as well, the transpalmar wicking plays a rather important role, because I was very pleased to hear that the most crucial evaporative effect occurs on the skin side. I guess I just missed a slide before, but doesn't matter that much. We need to ensure that evaporation takes place on the skin side. As soon as we have evaporation on the outer side, on the garment, or if we have like multi-layer systems, even further beyond the cooling effect of evaporation on the human body gets reduced dramatically. So it's not, if you would like to cool, it's not about removing moisture, but it's about ensuring that we have evaporation on the skin side. Just to imagine, if you have some evaporation just a few millimeters apart from the skin surface, this reduces like evaporative cooling of the skin by around 50%. So just very few millimeters has like dramatic effects. Furthermore, of course, ventilation plays an important role as well, because you just can see here, we somehow generate microclimates with our textiles. So everyone has some microclimate between the skin and between the textile, which means as soon as we start to evaporate here, relative humidity gets increased in the clothing microclimate. Increased humidity means a reduced gradient, humidity gradient between skin side and its adjacent air layer, and the reduced gradient somehow reduces the potential of the evaporative cooling by sweat evaporation. So it's important that this very humid air, which can go up to 100%, that this cool, wet air, so to say, is removed, and some new fresh air having low humidity is delivered and ensures like ongoing evaporative cooling on the skin. So, as you heard, it's all about support of the evaporative heat loss. And now I find it again, my slide, so just in a second you will see it. So there are different strategies to take into account. So I will just in a second introduce you definitely to this cooling efficiency. We've heard about the fabric wicking properties we somehow can steer. So there is quite a lot about the capillary transport, so the transport between the fibers and the adjacent environment, but also the moisture transport on the fibers themselves, which we can affect. And finally, it's also about the water vapor resistance. So as I said, you generate a lot of humidity, and this humidity somehow needs to leave the microclimate between skin and the textile. If it does not leave this environment, we just will have high humidity and no further cooling enabled by evaporation. So here we go. What is about the evaporative cooling? So there's a study from Havanith et al. In 2013 showing the effect of the location actually of the evaporation. So he used a clothing model consisting of a skin model and applied different types of fabric layers. And then he just wetted different layers to see what kind of cooling effect he was able to observe on the skin. And when he applied like a wet skin, which was then applied below an underwear and an outer layer. He reached an evaporative cooling efficiency near to 1, which means the full evaporative power, which can be obtained from the evaporation of moisture, was actually applied to skin, which means cooled down the skin. So there was the same heat loss from skin as can be expected from like the evaporation of water, which is around 2,400 watts. However, if you just slightly move outwards, so if he wetted the underwear, for example, including a certain air layer, one can see that the evaporative cooling efficiency already is decreased by 1/4. So which means only 75% of the cooling capacity was applied on the skin, and the remaining 25% was already applied just to the textile environment. And if you just move further out, finally, he also wetted the outer layer and observed the cooling effect on the skin. You just can see that it was roughly 20%, so 80% of the cooling capacity just was derived from the layer. Well, you could say, well, but here is another line which shows 300% of cooling efficiency, and that is the superb solution. Well, it's not really, because it's impermeable clothing system. And here, Havanis was able to show this so-called heat pipe effect, which means they showed that there is evaporation on the skin side. We had a mitigation or a migration of water vapor to the impermeable outer layer. Here we had like a recondensation of the moisture and like a dripping back to the skin. So we had like a circle and therefore like an iterative heat transfer with like the same amount of moisture, which of course, so to say, increased the cooling efficiency. However, comfort in this kind of situations, impermeable clothing system, is not that well. And of course, you do not have fresh air provided, so no convection at all, which is not comfortable at all. So, knowing where we have a lot of sweating, knowing that we need to have moisture transport on the skin, knowing that we should distribute the moisture around the body to evenly cool the body surface, leads or brings us to body mapping. So how can we profit as much as possible from our evaporated sweat or from sweat, and how we can we evaporate it as efficient as possible? Here we did a study in our lab on our sweating mannequin Sam. So this mannequin is like a thermal mannequin. We can apply different kind of clothing and we can imitate sweating and observe the cooling effect of sweating on this physical body. It's anatomically more or less shaped like a human, and it's even able to move like walking imitations. However, this was not the goal for this study, but just looking at the effect of a control shirt, which was a normal like polyester shirt, and we combined different kind of different clothing or fabric layers with different properties in order to observe the effect of these different combinations. Furthermore, we looked at regular fit and we looked at tight fit as well, because as we'll see in a second, this also becomes very, very important. So what we figure out first is with body mapping, so here compared to the control shirt, we were able to, let's say, slightly increase by a few percent the cooling effect on the body. On the other hand, what we were able to see is that the fitting of the clothing is much, much more important than the body mapping itself. So if you would like to have improved moisture transfer in your fabrics, you need to have contact with your skin, which means you need to have nicely fitting shirts in order to have the transfer of the sweat to the shirt. If there is no contact at all, you will not profit from the superb moisture management properties of your shirt. So the moisture needs to get into your shirt, needs to be transported on the skin in order to have its cooling effect. So we also looked in our lab about the clothing fit. How does this look like? And here you just can see the fit of different tight-fitting jersey undershirts. And you can see the green areas indicate contact between the shirt, the clothing, and the body. And yellow to red color indicates indicate air gaps between the fabric and the skin. Here you have the color scale where you can see air gap thicknesses from around 1.5 millimeter. That was the accuracy of our methodology, which then went up to roughly 90 millimeters. So basically what you can see, irrespective of the fit of the shirt, you always have rather nice contact area in your upper chest, and you have, let's say, rather nice contact in your upper shoulder or in your shoulder region. However, in the abdomen region, the looser your shirt gets, the less contact you have. And the same actually applies for your lower back. The looser the shirt, the looser the fit, the more air gap thickness you will get. So don't do body mapping with a loose-fitting shirt in your lower back. This definitely does not work. At least the moisture management properties applied to shirts applied in this region will not work. However, there could be other solutions where we could apply in such kind of regions. And in the next few slides, I would just like to introduce you to some technologies or some ideas which were developed for like smart fabrics. So I just mentioned in the beginning that the water vapor resistance is another important aspect to be considered, so that water vapor can leave the microclimate between skin and fabric. And here we have this stimuli responsive polymers which provide a very, very interesting approach here. So if there is no humidity at all, or not no humidity at all, but low humidity, actually the pores are closed, so ensuring some protection from the environment, low air permeability, and as soon as there is some humidity from evaporated sweat, the pores open and actually reduce the water vapor resistance so that the moisture, the evaporated moisture can leave the clothing microclimate and ensure a steady exchange between the clothing and the environment in order to maintain evaporative cooling performance. The same applies here, but a different strategy, which is adapting fabrics with a shell and core strategy, where we have different properties of the yarn supplied with, which show different responses to humidity. And this responses actually lead to a widening of the fabric in case of humidity available. And this widening actually opens the pores again. So here again, it's more or less just the same strategy as before. It's just not the polymers which somehow get a conformation change, but here we just have open the pores by changes in the structure of the yarn applied. It even goes further. So, of course, as you all know, the fabrics become 3D as well, and here is a company called X Technology, which are working on 3D bionic spheres. And what they do, they try to increase the textile surface area by having this channel-like structures. So what you can see here, the skin is on the lower side. We have sweating on top of the skin, and like that the channels take up moisture, and by the increased surface, we can increase the evaporation. But you remember, right? Of course, the evaporation on this side does not have the same effective or the same effect as the direct evaporation directly on the skin. On the other hand, they claim that like inner air channels maintain skin wetness, and skin wetness in a certain range of around 70% is important for the continuous cooling of the skin surface. And again, here the outer air channel ensure convection, and convection, as we know, is important to have like fresh air, low humidity air, in order to maintain cooling performance. On the other hand, the same structure also works in cold conditions. We trap air in the inner channel, and as you know, air is one of the best insulators you can have. Well, still air, moving air already induces convective heat transfer, but if we have like local air not moving, provides very high insulation and very good insulative properties. Finally, we even go to micro 3D structures. Of course, here we look at the nature and try to mimic solutions from nature. Don't know if you heard about the thorny devil. That's an animal, not very nice to look at, but it exists in the desert of Australia. Definitely not much water available there, but this animal, it collects its moisture on the whole surface. It directs all the moisture trapped on the surface of the animal to his mouth, so it gets enough water from its environment. And this was imitated by X-Bionics, where they developed this hydroport yarn. So they claim, we did not test it, we did not prove that it works, but actually the idea behind it is very interesting, to have on one hand a very hydrophilic surface, so this enables very facilitated moisture transport on one hand, and this hydroport yarn enables like directed transport. So what they try to do here is transport moisture from high sweating areas, which are the spine and the forehead, to high physical activity areas, which is mainly like the big muscle we have on the thigh, the muscles quadriceps, where we have a lot of heat production. And if we can get local cooling by sweat evaporation there, this of course facilitates cooling and performance as well. They even go one step further. I just saw this while preparing this presentation. They have a method or a new technology called the trick. And the trick, it works like they apply like a spine insulation zone, which is here. And we do not only have a high sweating area here, but also we have a lot of temperature sensors located in the body here. So by an insulation zone, you imitate actually local heating, which is then directed to the head. So the head gets an idea while the body gets warm. And if the body gets warm, it starts to sweat. So they would like to induce sweating by mimicking a local heat. And they get sweat, again, more in this region, and again, they apply their hydroport system to finally moist the high activity zones, mainly the leg, and cool down the legs this way. As you know, the area here is blank. I have no percentages about how much this supports our performance, but I just found it quite interesting to see that we're already at like imitating some changes in body conditions to somehow induce some physiological responses. And finally, also, well, we heard about before, I guess, about different structures, fibers. There are even hollow fibers available right now, not only treated on the surface, but enabling a water transfer within the hollow fibers to have an even distribution on the whole fabric in order to facilitate cooling, not only in the high sweating areas, but all over the body. Good. So, just moving on, in the next or the final two, three slides, I would also like to introduce you to some new topics which are also applied for body mapping. And here you can see, like, coming from passive transport really to an active moisture transport. And here it's about the Hydrobot system, which was newly released at the ISPO, where we have an active transport of moisture from an inner layer to an outer layer. And well, if you think, why is that important? Because we just heard that this works. However, here we have a protective skiing jacket, so to say. So we have like a reduced water vapor transfer rate through the jacket. It's highly insulated. You need to have or feel warm in cold conditions. However, having intermittent high activities, this can induce sweating, and you need to get rid of this kind of sweating. So by applying some electric currents, this company actually is able to transfer moisture from the inner side to the outer side, even against a humidity gradient. So if you have lower gradient, humidity gradient than inside than outside, you still are able to transport the moisture to the outside. However, we figured out with our models that here again, this system mainly works in areas where we have high air gaps and where we can ensure condensation in the outer layer, because this system works only with condensated liquid moisture and does not work with water vapor. Furthermore, a system which was developed at EMPA is having this active cooling system, which induces cooling by applying some moisture, having water vapor permeable membranes, and therefore ensuring a local cooling of the skin by around 3 to 4 degrees Celsius. However, as you can expect, we figured out that this system mainly also works with ventilation, so the very humid air needs to be removed. So finally, this system was, for example, applied in bulletproof vests. You can imagine these are not the highly breathable textiles. So we applied this cooling pad within this bulletproof vests, and in addition also implemented like a ventilation system, so the humid air got removed, some new fresh air came in, and our policemen in Zurich stayed very at a high performance and were able, of course, to look that or to do their work. The same, or similar technologies are also applied in other protective textiles, for example, biking jackets, where some active ventilating systems are applied as well in order to maintain the clothing microclimate. And finally, talking about evaporation, talking about ventilation, as I said, solar irradiation, you are actually nearly not able to increase heat loss by radiation, but you are able to reduce the solar radiation by fabrics. So here just one example from Schoeller Textiles in Switzerland, which incorporated some finishings of their textiles called Cold Black, where they were able to induce reflective materials even on black materials in order to avoid like heating just below the fabrics. And well, same strategy can also apply on other textiles. You can see this guy here at the Olympic Games in Athens, wearing like highly reflective clothing parts on the shoulders, and also his hat reflected the sun irradiation on one hand, and as he was moving like in the back direction, he had like an increased ventilation of his hat while rowing. However, I'm not aware if this guy won the gold medal or not. So coming to an end, it's not only about the clothing, I need to say here as a physiologist. It's about different aspects. First of all, train your body. Get used to the conditions you need to work, you need to do your job or you would like to be. Consider also your behavior, which means drink enough in order to maintain your performance. And finally, look at the kind of activity you're going to do and select your appropriate clothing for your activity. Clothing can definitely support your activity. Clothing can support your physiological response in order to maintain your core body temperature. But besides all the textiles and clothing, just be aware of your body needs as well. Good. With that, and if it any way got too hot, rest and cool down, take a drink. Okay, with that, coming to an end, and thank you very much for your attendance.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright April 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.